Hey, you're tuned in to Met Radio CJTM 1280 AM on the dial for the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Mia Johnson. City Council accepted a hard reality last December. Toronto is not on track to meet its climate goals. A city often referred to as the birthplace of municipal climate change response is now at risk of falling behind. Yet, in the last 4 years, a record-breaking number of climate policies have been voted through council. A total of 74 climate-related items between December 2022 and December 2025 were ratified. So why can't Toronto get a cap on its own emissions? With a municipal election just around the corner, the grassroots climate action group Climate Fast is keeping tabs on how councillors have been voting on various climate policies. They're checking their list and they're checking it twice. And for the most part, councillors are on the nice list. Keeping score is climate activist and Climate Fast rep Anna Hardy. She joins us to crunch the numbers and to try and answer what is stalling progress, while also sounding the alarm around the massive boom in AI data center development and what building more of them could mean for the city and its climate goals. Here's our conversation. Okay. Hey, Anna. Thanks so much for coming on CJTM.
Thanks for having me.
Could we start with just an introduction about yourself and a little bit about who you are and who Climate Fast is for people who may not be so familiar with your work?
Sure. So Climate Fast is a grassroots climate action group here in Toronto. And we do work in the GTA as a whole as well, because, you know, even though Toronto has its borders, air pollution and emissions cross over our municipal boundaries, we do also look at like other municipalities like Mississauga, Vaughan, Brampton, and others. One of the projects that we have going on is the Climate Voting Records Toronto project, and we look at how Toronto City Council is voting on climate-related policies, like for transit, bike lanes, food sovereignty, Indigenous relations, and other climate-related policies happening on a monthly basis.
Yeah, it's very hard to ignore the changes in climate. We're heading into wildfire season. We're heading into the summer where we saw record-breaking heat waves last season. Toronto is lagging significantly behind on its five-year climate plan.
It's clear from this report that we're not on track for our climate commitments, right?
To the speaker, yes, the report identifies that we would not meet our current goals based on the actions in the plan.
So this is a significant retreat from what we've promised the people of Toronto for the last many years since we first adopted a climate emergency declaration. This is us now saying we're not going to do what it's going to take. There's excuses, but basically we're saying we're not going to do what it's going to take to do what we committed to, right?
What's been stalling that progress, and where can Toronto make up for lost time?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think there are definitely limitations at the municipal level in terms of responsibilities and jurisdiction. The province has a lot of power when it comes to environmental policies, and they often override any municipal policy. And they're just like a really different, they're at odds what's happening at the province and the municipal level. The city needs more funding. It really does, in order to make meaningful climate progress. And the province can't keep getting in the way when cities take a stand and actually try to put forward meaningful policies.
Right. So how important are these votes that when Toronto's trying to push forward these policies?
Yeah, through the Voting Records Project, we do see a lot of watering down of the policies. So even when there's a councillor that supports the final vote for, you know, bike lanes or building emissions or whatnot, it's often kind of like a policy that's been significantly watered down through amendments. And even in the background, when the policies are getting drafted, there's a lot of consideration and weight put into the legal side and making sure that no lines are crossed. But sometimes to make meaningful climate policies, you kind of do need to take a stand and put together some pretty aggressive things. And Yeah, we see a lot of councillors supporting climate action, but that's in part because the policies put forward aren't the most climate progressive.
Yeah. Is there a specific example that Climate Fast maybe was watching in terms of a policy that went forward that you were really excited about and then it got watered down at a later stage?
There was the building emission standards. The Transform TO was getting revisited last year. And in that process, there were the Toronto Emission Building Standards that were significantly watered down from the previous version. In the end, a lot of councillors supported Transform TO, including councillors like Stephen Holliday, who aren't usually climate supportive. They did actually end up supporting Transform TO in part because it was watered down quite a bit.
Right. Yeah. We have the summer season coming up, and then we also are headed into an election very soon. Municipal elections are coming up. Toronto will hit the polls this October. There is, yeah, a city-wide election. You've been working on putting together voter report cards with Climate Fast. What can you tell us about this initiative, and what are you hoping comes out of it?
Yeah, so we've been looking at how each of the 25 councillors plus the mayor has voted on climate-related policies over the past 4 years. And we looked at every time they voted yes, every time they voted no, every time they were absent by category, so things like transit, bike lanes, etc. The results aren't super surprising. I think most people involved in tracking and like climate advocacy already know who is not supportive of climate and who is. So the results highlight this using data. Some really supportive counselors, famously known Amber Morley, Alejandra Bravo, has a perfect score on climate. So they haven't voted no a single time in the past 4 years, which is great. And then there are some counselors who are famously known to not be in favor of climate, like Stephen Holliday and Brad Bradford and Pasternak and others. I don't think there'll be anything super surprising when we release the report cards on May 2nd. We're doing an in-person event at Friend's House. We'll be sharing the results there.
What is the benefit of documenting these votes and sort of keeping a record on them?
I think because we're looking at everything from the past 4 years, it kind of gives a bird's eye view. But with that said, there are limitations to that as well. Like it does help to have a really in-depth view of one or two policies and know its like whole story inside and out. But you know, this gives more like bird's eye view that people working in it might not have because they're so involved in the day-to-day. And ultimately, this scorecard I think is for residents and for people in our climate community who don't always know how to read data or interact with like high-level political staff. There's a bit of a disconnect, I think, between the community and people who like are really involved in this stuff and are working in this in the policy world. So hopefully like this is for residents and for the community. It's really for us to inform our own advocacy and try figure out which wards to support, which wards need the most help when the municipal election comes along.
Yeah, and what's the consensus? Like, can you tell us, did council mostly fail, or have most of them passed this report card?
I think they've surprisingly done well. Like we were surprised by how like Frances Nunziata, she is not known to be the most progressive counselor, but when we look at her climate records, she only voted no once out of I think it's something like 75 or so items. But voting one out of 75 is pretty strong record. So there are a couple surprising findings from this. I would also highlight that we looked at absent votes as well. Who didn't vote? Maybe they were in the bathroom taking a break, or they just didn't show up to council at all. I think that's an important takeaway. Like you could vote no, or you could choose not to show up, and those are equally bad.
Yeah. Do you think this report card has been revealing of where the council stands on climate, or is it something that's, the writing has been on the wall? We understand this about this council.
I think there's actually quite a bit to celebrate for this council. And obviously, it's really important to push and highlight all the areas for improvement that need to happen. Like I mentioned earlier, a lot of these policies are watered down. So it's not enough to say, yeah, they voted in favor of all these climate policies all the time, but they have done okay. Like, I think this is a surprisingly good news story for most counselors, and ones where some people might be like, "What? Wow, they actually did really well." Like it might be a surprise for some people. So, I think overall, City Council did pretty well. And, you know, when we look at the federal level and the provincial level of government right now, we're seeing politicians become increasingly more conservative, and we won't know what will happen in October's municipal elections this year, but we do want to keep a lot of these councillors, or at least set the bar as high as possible for the next cohort that comes in.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the election and how things are going to shake up. But just to go back to the way councillors are voting and climate progress in Toronto, Climate Fest also has another initiative going on right now. Could you tell me a little bit more about that, Anna?
Yeah, so we have the Say No to AI Data Centers campaign. It's relatively new. There are AI data centers popping up all across Toronto. We know that the Minister of Energy in Ontario is expecting at least 16 data centers by 2035. And the energy demand that's currently being requested for connection from all these data centers is equivalent to powering 6.5 million homes. So it's an enormous amount of electricity coming from these data centers trying to get access to our grid that we might ultimately be responsible for paying. We don't want to see higher bills, and we don't want to see more gas-generated electricity procured for these data centers. What's going to be powering these data centers is fossil fuels. And there hasn't been, yeah, a lot of like coverage on this in the media. And I think just because AI data centers are really good at lobbying, politicians in the media are kind of behind on the wheel with this. But there can be some really big implications that need to be addressed soon.
What could those implications be?
So higher electricity bills, that's a big one, especially with the US-Israel war in Iran. We're seeing like higher fossil fuel and energy costs. So if we're demanding more electricity generated by natural gas, who's going to pay for this? And this is going to be for AI data centers, which requires so much electricity. We shouldn't pay for that, and we don't want to have these emissions harming people's health. Data centers also have on-site diesel generators, which release toxic pollutants like nitrogen oxide. And we've seen cases in the States, like with Elon Musk's data center in Memphis, like that can have really harmful health impacts. If you have asthma, if you're a senior, if you're a kid, these data centers are close to people. They're not just like out in the middle of nowhere. They are like close to people because they are so proximate. They can have some direct health impacts on neighboring communities.
And is this something that the current council would be voting on, or something that would be in the new pool of councillors?
Yeah, Councillor Rachel Chernos-Lynn and Councillor Diane Sachs put together an item recently to get more information from city staff on zoning regulations for data centers in Toronto specifically, but it's not like asking all the questions we need. Unfortunately, most of the jurisdiction and the decision-making abilities for data center approvals exist at the province. So even though we'll get some kind of report back later in 2027 from City Council for Toronto, really the province, so Minister Lecce and Energy and the Ministry of Environment at the provincial level, they need to consult on each data center that comes and wants to get connection, wants to pollute in our communities. They have to consult and have the responsibility to consult, but they are not. They're doing this all internally. We know that they're talking to data center companies because they've said that they talk to these new customers on a weekly basis. There was apparently a customer that was trying to connect for 3,000 megawatts, and they were talking to the Associate Minister of Energy.
So I've had the privilege of meeting now with a number of people in the data center space, and they've been very clear. We know that it's needed because increased demand from data centers is inevitable. I think all of us who have been on the internet recently can tell you that that's more and more becoming a reality with artificial intelligence.
There is lobbying happening by the data center industry to the provincial politicians, and we don't know what's happening there, but it's happening.
3,000 megawatts, what is that for a normal, can you put that into perspective for me? Because I hear that number and I can't contextualize it.
Yeah, that 3,000 megawatt interest is equivalent to powering homes for 3 million homes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and homes is like you could have multiple people in a home. So it's not even like providing electricity to 3 million people, it's providing electricity to 3 million homes. That's just one data center.
How does the Olivia Chow Council differ from John Tory? I don't think we had report cards for this sort of thing back then. Correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, how are they different from each other?
Yeah, in terms of the number of climate-related policies, this council has a significantly higher number compared to the previous cohort from the 2018 to 2022 John Tory cohort. They're just passing a lot more. So it's like more bike lanes, more transit items, more buildings, like waste management. All of these items, there's just more in quantity. As for how they're voting differently, I don't know if there's much change, but I think one surprising thing about the municipal level of government is they tend to be much more climate progressive. And even though John Tory is more conservative to Olivia Chow, there were some very climate progressive items that went through during his time. Mm. But I think overall, Olivia Chow has done a significantly better job.
Hey, Mia from the future here, just popping in to say we did this interview last week when most longtime councillors hadn't announced their intentions to run. As of Thursday morning, Councillor Gord Perk's office did confirm he won't be running again after 20 years of working for the city. Okay, back to the interview.
Most Toronto councillors have been quiet on re-election plans. I've heard some rumours that some longtime councillors don't have plans to seek re-election at all. How do you think that could shake things up? And is a shake-up what the city needs? Is this a good thing?
I hope that whatever happens, all the councillors that did well in their climate votes continue to run again. And I think as the climate community, we need to be selective of the wards we focus on and really support those key ridings that have a potential to tip in either direction. The downtown wards in Toronto are pretty much secured to be very climate progressive. At the provincial, they're often NDP. So I think like really looking at the outskirts of Toronto, like North York, West Etobicoke, North East Scarborough, like really paying attention to those wards that have the potential to go in either direction. I think it's important to protect or look at what candidates choose to run there.
Thank you so much, Anna, for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Anna Hardy is a climate activist with Climate Fast, a local grassroots climate action group in Toronto. The 2026 municipal election is on Monday, October 26th. Potential candidates can register when nominations open this Friday. You've been tuned into Met Radio CJTM at 1280 AM in downtown Toronto for the Local Journalism Initiative. I am Mia Johnson.